Hello, Mixed Nutcases. This is Nuke Joss. I have put out a soft launch of a Patreon campaign to help get some donations for the show. And there's some special limited time only rewards right now going on, including original art from me. And there are only, I believe, 11 of those left. Is it 11 of them left? Oh, no, 11 are claimed. Sorry, there are 9 of those left. So if you'd like to get your hands on it, you can go to patreon.com/nukejoss, or you can check out the show notes and there will be a link in there. But please stay tuned. I will have more information on this at the end of the show. And no, you do not have to go through Patreon for all of this. I am accepting contributions in any way, and you will never have to contribute to continue hearing the full show for free. Thank you. Please enjoy this discussion, debate, whatever you want to call it, that is coming up now.
Hey, kittens. This is Vivid Muse from the Girls Rules podcast, and you're listening to the tasty, nom-tastic, Nutty Bites.
Hello, Mixed Nutcases. This is Nuke Joss, and I've got a special episode of Nutty Bites for you. And today we're going to be discussing women in fiction. And with me, I have two fantastic women to help me talk about this. First, I've got Miss Philippa Ballantyne.
Hello.
And I've got Melissa Bartel with me.
Hello.
So we're going to be discussing women in fiction, but in this episode, because I'm going to come back to this a couple of times, we're going to really talk about the idea of girl books and boy books, or books written for women, and how that works. I think I can pretty much guess that most of us here on the panel don't really believe there's such a thing as girl books or boy books.
I think that's fair to say.
Definitely. But unfortunately, it seems that that is something that we keep getting told is out there, and the way that marketing is working. So let's start with just a little introduction and why I picked both of you ladies. So we're going to start with Pip. You are an author and a librarian, so you've got two perspectives that you bring to the table.
Uh-huh.
So why don't you tell the listeners a little bit about yourself if they don't know for some reason?
Oh, okay. I'm Philippa Pitt Ballantyne. I was originally from New Zealand. I've been in America about 5 years now. So I wrote fantasy, the Books of the Order series, and I write steampunk adventure, The Ministry of Peculiar Occurrences with my husband, T. And I've been a life, well, been 5 years since I've been a librarian, but I'm always a librarian in my heart.
Excellent. And Melissa is also a writer and a journalist. And why don't you give us a little bit of an introduction?
Oh, well, I've been a blogger forever. I'm a voracious reader, and I also run a book called Leotica.
Ding!
So right now, my review queue is like 43 books long, and that takes me through March.
Excellent. So let's first talk a little bit about the first time you realized there was a concept of girl books and boy books.
I don't think I really did until I heard someone else go, well, this is like chick letter. This is women's fiction. And I was going, no, it's just a book.
Yeah, I mean, my whole thing when I was like a teenager growing up, I was feeding off my dad's book collection. So they were just books to me. My dad shared them with me. He seemed to like them. And interestingly enough, he's gone more into what some people might call girl books. Laurel K. Hamilton, paranormal, fantasy, urban fantasy, that sort of stuff. I guess maybe when I was a librarian, you know, some people might ask for, you know, I want a romance book, but I never really thought of them as girl or boy books.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I had a very similar experience. Growing up, I come from a very large family, so we had a bit of a large house. And on the landing of one of the stories of the house, my dad and I, we had built shelves just thick enough for paperbacks, and they were like 15 mm-hmm. or 20 going up the wall all on the landing. So we had like this awesome library in the house, and you'd finish reading a book and you'd go downstairs and you'd grab one. And it was broken up a little bit. The sci-fi and the fantasy were over towards the hall leading towards the bathroom, and then the classics were in the main section. But that's about all that we had broken up. So
you
going
didn't have any pink books or blue books?
No, there were no pink books. There were no blue books. There were no girl books. There were no boy books. So
funny how that works.
Yeah, so that's how I selected most of what I would read. Is I would just go finish a book, bring it back, pick out another one. And it wasn't until I don't remember if I was doing book reports or if I was reading a book in school or something, and someone's like, aren't those boy books? Why are you reading that? You know, and it's like, that's what boys read. I'm like, what? I just was completely baffled, and it didn't make sense to me. And there's a story that I want to share from my husband, which he has told me millions of times, and it's very important, is when he was growing up, and he was, was into the stage, he heard about the series, The Babysitter Club. And he was, I am all into that. You know, I babysit, so it's for me. All these people I know in my class are reading them, so I want to read them. And he went to the library and he asked for The Babysitter's Club, and he would get it and all the other stuff. And then when it was time to do a book report, he said he wanted to do it on The Babysitter's Club. And someone said, those are girl books. Huh? You can't read that. You're a boy. He's like, but I'm a babysitter.
They're, that's a good story.
They're books for me. I don't understand. And then I can talk to the girls about them and you know, the people that I know that are reading them. And he basically got teased for reading these books that were on his grade level about a topic he was interested in, and most of his friends were reading.
Oh, that poor guy. That's not fair.
Yeah. And I think, once you get that bit of a, you're not supposed to read it because of your gender, it's a little intimidating, especially considering that they've done so many studies about how there's a certain age in school that young men stop reading for some reason.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's sad. I mean, I went to an all-girls school, so I didn't have anybody telling me that.
Well, that's good.
So that was a plus. But, yeah, I think, we've got an 11-year-old daughter, and she just loves to read. And I haven't noticed anything that's like, it's a boy book, it's a girl book. She's like, it's got dragons in it, it's got cats in it.
Sounds good to me. Yep. I've got many nieces and nephews, but one of my nieces is very much into what the stores would define as boy books or whatever. But she's also into very supposedly girly things. So, you know, dragons, awesome. Does it have unicorns too? Cool. You know, she's grown up always wanting to be a Sith princess. You know, my favorite thing is she giggled when Alderaan blew up. She thought that was the funniest thing.
It was hilarious. And then she lived there.
And so.
I'm just really lucky because I grew up mostly reading the classics that were around my grandparents' house.
Is awesome.
And then by the time I was in school, we were all reading things like Stephen King, which doesn't really have a gender anyway.
Yeah. True.
Yeah, I read a bunch of stuff. From New Zealand tended to get British stuff. So I would read things like The Famous Five and The Secret Seven and all of that sort of stuff. And they had some, looking back on them, they had some dodgy stuff about girls, you know, the girl and The Famous Five should be making tea and buttering sandwiches. But there was also the girl who was like, I've got a dog, I'm going to go and have, you know, adventures. Because I used to spend a lot of time with my grandma, so I would also read stuff from the 50s and 60s that my mother had read. I don't know whether I feel like the whole thing about boy books and girl books is really, I feel like it's about the romance genre.
Mm-hmm.
I think there's a lot because I'm actually, T and I are going to the RT convention, which is the big romance writers convention in Vegas in a couple of months. And it's very interesting to see the different demographics that go to that convention. I think T might be one of four guys that might be there.
Possibly. Well, and even when men do write romance, male romance writers are often encouraged by publishers to go by a female pseudonym.
Yeah.
And one of the Mixnecks, Mark Hunter, is a romance author, and he was like, nope, I'm going to use my real name, and he's doing pretty well with that, which is awesome. And but it's very interesting to me that it's like, oh no, 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 you need to have a female name.
Last year we picked up an award at the RT convention, but also there was two guys that won an award, and everyone was like, yeah. It was sort of the opposite of girl power. It was like, yeah, boy power and romance.
Yeah, well, and cool, we see the same thing in science fiction. When a woman's writing in science fiction or crime or mysteries, suddenly she's encouraged to go down to initials.
Yes.
Or something to mask her gender. Which drives me crazy, that the idea that science fiction and horror and things like that are supposed to be very male, yet it's an entire genre that was created by a teenage girl.
That's right.
I pitched something to them like a decade ago, and they were like, well, you're a woman, so one strike, and it's science fiction, and nobody's reading that anyway. And I'm like, yeah, they are.
People haven't ever stopped reading science fiction.
Not that I'm aware, no. I mean, like anything, there's fads and trends and stuff, but you know, I think the genre is not going anywhere.
No, I really don't think so. I mean, there's definitely people that will say, oh, I don't read sci-fi. No. But
whoops, guess what I'm going to be working on in the next couple of months?
Sci-fi? Science fiction. Exactly. But if you look at books and media and, you know, TV and movies, sci-fi is all over the place. And women are into it.
Awesome.
Oh, I love that show.
Which one was that? I missed it.
The Expanse.
Oh, I haven't caught that yet, no.
Oh, you should. You should. And the thing I like about that is the writing team, that two guys that write it together, the books, actually got invited to write for the show. And they came into the writer's room.
Oh, that's awesome.
And I was like, that's my dream.
Well, that's what George R. R. Martin got to do, what was part of the contract for the Game of Thrones series, which I really loved. Except last season, he's like, no, I'm not going to do that anymore. I'm going to focus on my books. But that was awesome because you knew that the highlight of the season was going to be a Martin-written episode. Yes. So, yeah, the publishers definitely are the ones that seem to want to push this idea. And it's, I can't remember who it is, but one of my friends is always talking about how much he hates splitting genres, you know, creating genres for books. They're all books. They're all literary. So, you know, what's the difference between literature and sci-fi? Nothing. And it feels like the publishers and the marketing teams are really trying to push that. This is for teenagers. This is for girls. This is for housewives, you know.
The argument between what's YA and what isn't is a whole other show.
Yes.
Yes. But it's almost like, are the publishers shooting themselves in the foot by trying to break things up by gender? Or is it actually working for them?
I don't know if anything in publishing is working as well as it should be.
This is very true.
I don't know. I know that when they do the cover art, they're aiming for a particular, like, I mean, they brought out Harry Potter in different versions for when they suddenly worked out that grown people were reading it.
Right.
Yeah. I don't know. I think the YA is very friendly to female writers, and they don't seem to have to hide themselves quite as much. I don't know. You can tell usually, but for me, it's usually the covers. You can tell who they're kicking it towards. If I see pink and purple, I know who.
Well, that's a dead giveaway. And if you see a woman doing the boobs and butt pose.
Yes.
It's, yeah. Who was it that was doing recreations of covers with himself?
Oh, Jim C. Hines.
Yes.
It was funny because he did one of our very first Ministry cover, which is not my favorite cover.
You're right.
And so he did that, and then T did one. Did we gender flipped it?
Yep.
And T did.
Yeah, because you guys did it because you're like, you did it, but you didn't make enough fun of it.
No.
There's so much more.
he ended up in a charity calendar for that. So he's
now a calendar girl.
Oh, that's great.
I love it.
But yeah, I think because I used to work as a bookseller as well, back in the dim dark days. And I think a lot of what they do for that is to help, it used to be when there were bookstores, to help them know where to put it, you know, what to group it with. Let's put all the purple and pink together, draw the girls.
Nobody ever came, at least when I was working in a bookstore, nobody ever came in and said, where's your women's fiction?
Yeah.
I saw this book on Oprah, and I don't remember the title, but it was last week, and it was blue.
It was blue.
Like, yeah, all the blue books are on that wall.
It's a problem for librarians and booksellers alike. It was a blue book. What was it? But yeah, so a lot of that sort of marketing sort of side of things is very artificial.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of that they put constraints on the book. But I don't know. I feel like there's a maturity of science fiction and fantasy, particularly because a variety of different people are writing stuff and writing a lot of diversity and stuff that I'm really enjoying. And I don't feel like that's – I know there are some butthurt men that are like, oh, you're ruining it with getting your ovaries in my fantasy science fiction. But it's also – but I think it's improving the genre because it's making it more realistic to have more complex characters that are reflecting people around us, you know.
Absolutely.
I don't think that makes it man or woman. I've told this story about my dad who he started off like right in the golden, what they called the golden age of science fiction, you know, reading Asimov and all of that sort of stuff. And then he is now reading exclusively women. And he said, I asked him about it and he was like, I don't read men anymore. They don't write good enough characters.
That's kind of funny.
Yeah. He's just, he really likes, because he reads to get inside a character's head and enjoy the adventure with them.
Yeah.
And if it's all just about, I'm just going to drive my big ship and shoot another ship, he's not interested in that.
Yeah. No, I can definitely relate there. I mean, because for me, I really want to care about the character.
Mm. Yeah.
If it's just the action, I don't care.
Yeah. So, I'm really, really enjoying seeing people getting more complex. I think it's really good for guys as well to read that sort of stuff because it tells them it's okay to, you know, feel different things.
Yeah.
I'm getting very philosophical now. I don't even have a brain.
Well, your discussion with your father reminds me of a discussion I had with my brother-in-law years ago, like at least 10 years ago. And, he was telling me about a book that he was reading, and he's like, I really enjoyed it, but I felt like I was reading a D&D campaign. And then I looked up the author online, and I found out, yes, I am reading a D&D campaign. And he said, well, that was kind of neat. But we started getting into things. I think that author was a woman, and he said, you know, it's very rare that I pick up a fantasy book written by a woman. I don't read fantasy written by women because I don't like how it is. And I said, really? Okay, so what is it? And we're trying to get into the nitty gritty of it. And he's saying, you know, and I feel bad about that. And he says, but it just doesn't speak to me. And I said, well, that's totally not true. And he's like, you know, how can you say that? And I said, well, because I know you read Weiss and Hickman. And he goes, oh, well, that doesn't count. And according to him, Weiss was the male and Hickman was the female in the way that they wrote. And I'm like, I think that's a compliment. And he's like, oh, it's totally a compliment.
Okay. Well, I mean, I enjoy writing with my husband. Yeah. We haven't killed each other yet. So I think we complement each other in a lot of different ways. And I just feel like science fiction and fantasy has become a lot more in depth and in a wonderful way.
You know? And I think what we figured out, and I think what it comes down to is that, especially 10 years ago and earlier, when you thought of fantasy and female or male authors, female fantasy was Mercedes Lackey.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And male fantasy was everything else. You know, it was Bob Salvatore and stuff like that.
That was it.
Pretty much true.
And that trained people, because who is the most known, you know, on what do they call that? House, who was a household name of a female that would write fantasy, and it would be Mercedes Lackey.
Mm-hmm.
So,
well, that's probably just, it's also volume as well. Yeah. I mean,
yeah. But I think now we're getting into a time when there's so many more authors and there's more names to go to, because instead of, I mean, yes, the publishing contracts are not as good for authors these days, but more authors have the means to get published now. You know, there's so many that are self-published, and we've heard the self-published success stories that get picked up by New York Publishing. We have one right here. And then, but even those who are self-publishing and refuse the New York publishers because they're just doing too well, I think there's just so many more authors out there that you really can't say, this is how women write and this is how men write.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think, I mean, like in my, back in 70s, 80s, there were only a few names to go to as far as women, if you knew they were women.
Yeah, yeah.
Because my favorite author, C.J. Cherry, I always say Shira because her name is Cherry, but she put an H on. Anyway, I didn't know she was a woman for a while, for a long time.
I didn't either.
Yeah, and then I found she's also one of my dad's favorite authors. So, yeah, I think there's just more women writing out there.
Yeah.
And also I think, I don't know, talking about romance, I mean, romance is a huge, huge part of the publishing world. It's like, what, 60, some huge amount of
It's always been the best-selling.
Yeah.
I found in what I've been reading and reviewing lately that romance has also gotten a lot more complex recently.
Yes. And yeah,
there have been times when I've been handed a title, and at the end I'll go, wait, this is Silhouette? No way.
Yeah, I mean, the big trend in romance right now is romantic suspense. So you've got your romance and maybe your hanky-panky, but you've also got some action happening, some sort of drama going on.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a lot more complex than it used to be.
And not all romance is sex. That's the other thing. Like, I remember when I was a kid, if you read romance, there were going to be sex scenes in there.
Mm-hmm.
And there's, I feel like we've got a larger spectrum. There's the romance where it's all just emotional romance. Then there's romance with some sex. And then there's full-blown erotic.
Yeah.
Well, which is kind of
Amish romance apparently is a big thing.
Wait, what?
No, yeah, it is. It's its own subject.
You haven't caught on to Amish romance?
No, I have not caught on to Amish romance.
I was at Steampunk Unlimited. And one of the ladies there, she writes steampunk, but she also writes, her other big seller is Amish romance. And I was so curious about it, I had to go up to her and just almost in a rude, ethereal manner, just sort of say, explain to me, who's finding these? And she said, I said, are Amish people reading Amish romance? And she said, no. She said, no, it's ladies in the Midwest.
Oh, you know what? Like, now I get it, actually, thinking about who's reading it. It's the idea of the super restrictive lifestyle and kind of breaking free of that. Yeah.
So, yeah. And also the interesting thing, because I'd never been to a romance convention, was that I was surprised at a couple of things. Was they were so welcoming. I mean, T and I write steampunk, and it has romantic elements in it, but it's not actually romance. I wouldn't categorize it as romance. But they're so accepting. They're like, oh, yeah, you come on in. Come on into the pool. And sometimes in science fiction circles, not so much with the acceptance. I'm just...
Yeah, well, there's a lot of, you know, this is my clubhouse, mm-hmm. and I have to, you know, a lot of gatekeeping.
Yeah.
There's definitely a lot of gatekeeping, especially with the old guard.
I feel like if there was somebody who was writing, like, say, a science fiction romance, and they came to a science fiction convention, they wouldn't get as warm a welcome.
No. I agree. Yeah, yes. I think that, and it's unfortunate because it's a genre that's supposed to be very accepting. Yes. And some of the classics have some steamy things going on in it, you know?
Yeah. Oh yeah, there's some great things. Yeah. So I was just interested in the breadth of romance, because my first romance novel that I read when I was 14, it had a cover with Fabio on the front. And
Bodice ripper.
I was just reading it for the hanky panky, basically. And That was what was in my head, I guess, as far as wouldn't have thought of it as a girl book, but I would have thought, okay, that's romance. I've dipped my toe in romance. It's not for me now. I've grown up.
But
now actually getting to read some current romances and stuff. I mean, the story, there's an actual story there as well as romance, and you know,
it's not all young girls who have not done anything. It's women who have lives and jobs.
Yeah. So I think maybe sometimes some science fiction authors might want to, you know, check it out sometime. You know, don't be afraid of emotion.
Well, maybe if some of those science fiction authors could open themselves up to romance, they would have more of a reason to have their characters have a romantic attraction instead of, you're the only other girl in the universe.
Oh, you're not talking about basically when certain writers who say, my main character's a female. No, she's just a guy that you've dressed up as.
Yeah,
you know,
a guy with boobs.
There's no mindset of a woman in there. It's just I'm writing a woman. I'm really writing me, but I'm writing a woman.
it's the author in a dress.
Yeah.
Yes. those sort of ones I like. Those are the only kind of books I ever want to throw. You know, I'm usually very respectful of books, but I'm just like, ugh. Do you ever talk to women?
Do not share this. No, it's going on to whoever is watching. But I have gotten to the point, finally, where if something really isn't grabbing me, I've learned it's okay to not finish it.
Yes. Life's too short to read bad books.
Yeah, I agree. Life is way too short for bad books. And I read so slowly that it's just not going to happen. If the book isn't grabbing me, I will stop reading it because it takes a long time. Now, if I'm listening to it, I might give it more of a shot. There's a lot of books I've listened to that I would never read.
Interesting. I'm still a print person. I'm way behind. I'm like a Neanderthal, really.
Yeah, I find that audiobooks take too long for me.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Very impatient.
Well, you probably read faster than you listen.
I read really fast.
Yeah,
me too. I love reading fast.
I read horribly slow, but the advantage for that for me is I remember everything I've read. So I often don't reread books because normally if I reread a book, I feel like I just read it because I remember it so much. And that if I actually reread a book, it's because the words are crafted so well that I enjoy that.
Mm-hmm. So, like a tasty meal.
Yeah, exactly. It's like second.
I've reread at different stages in my life and gotten different things out of.
Oh yeah, yeah. I can totally get that. But for me, like when I can remember where the words are going to go, it's distracting.
Mm-hmm.
So
plus, there's always more new cool books.
There are always new cool books, and I will listen to books that I've read before.
Really?
Yeah, it's a very different experience though. And I can put up with bad narration.
Oh.
Yeah. I'm very picky about my narration because the audiobook world has so many great narrators that when I listen to books like from Audible, I'm like, oh, that's terrible. Go away. And some of them are really great, but some of them are just like, what are you thinking? That is
Do you like listening to do you have a preference for male or female narrators of audiobooks?
It depends on the story. It really depends on the story. If the main character is female, I'm gonna want a female to be the narrator. No, I don't really have a preference. But I don't like people that do voices that can't really do voices.
I'm not a fan of men trying to put on women's voices.
Yeah, don't try to be a woman. No. Just read it.
We know you're not. It's okay.
Yeah. Yeah, just read it. But there are definitely like some narrators that I could hear read anything. I mean, for instance, Nathan Lowell, the way that he reads, he doesn't do voices, but he puts the emotion in all of the voices. And listening to his, what is it, Ravenwood? Ravenloft? Yeah. The one about the old lady?
Hmm. I think it's Ravenwood. I'm not sure.
Ravenwood. Yeah. I'm terrible at remembering the little details, but it's about a female. And normally I would say I'd want a female to read that, but the way that he reads it, he never tries to sound like a woman. He just has the emotion. And you hear the woman's voice in your own head in a way
that's really that's good not him.
Yeah. So it you know, it depends on the quality of the narrator, but yeah. If the narrator is just normal, then I'd prefer it to be the same gender as the main character and don't do voices.
I think that's the way with writing as far as girl books and boy books. I just want a well-written book.
True.
A character that I want to hang out with.
Mm-hmm.
I don't necessarily, I'm not like my dad and a total sexist towards men, but but I feel like the majority of what I read is female literature. It just tends to be end up in that direction. But I finished Chuck Wendig's Zeros the other day about hackers, who is totally not me. Mm-hmm. And I really, really enjoyed it. It had two really good, strong female characters in there. One of them not particularly nice, but that's okay.
Yeah.
And I really enjoyed it. And I was like, okay. And he does a really great series, Blackbirds. And the main character in that is just this tough, rather sometimes unpleasant woman. And so I'm like, I don't care that Chuck's a guy.
Yeah.
Doesn't bother me.
Well, and that's one of the things. It's like, as long as the character is three-dimensional, it's a good character. You know, you can have strong female characters and they are personally like physically weak and being able to be pushed around. One of my examples is Sansa Stark from A Song of Ice and Fire. Mm-hmm. And many people will say, oh, that's not a strong female character. I'm like, no, it is.
She's absolutely strong. She's just not muscly.
Yeah, she's not Buffy. A strong female character isn't Buffy. And unfortunately,
she's a really good, strong period character.
Yeah. Unfortunately, so many people, and often men, sometimes women, when they try to write a strong female character, they just write Buffy.
Yeah.
Without the depth, you know, because Buffy had weakness.
She did. It's her flaws that made her more interesting.
Exactly. And so to me, I really want in-depth characters. I want, like I said earlier in the episode, I want to care about the character. If I don't care about the character, fine. Have the aliens eat them. I don't care. but if I care about the character and I know I understand what's motivating the character, then I'm going to care about the series.
Yeah. I mean, I think if the two ships coming at each other and shooting at each other, there's no if there's characters on there that you care about, then there's the tension and you're like, ooh, I got to find out what happens when these two ships come together. But if they're just a bunch of, you know, cardboard cutout characters sort of just doing their jobs on the ship,
Yeah.
Blow them all away. Well, I've heard it said that science fiction is all about the big idea and the plot is the you know, what is happening?
Well, yeah, I hear a lot of it's world building and it's politics.
Yes.
But if I don't care about the people living in that world and engaging in those politics, I'm not going to care.
Yeah.
I think we're coming off the edge of a wave of a lot of people thinking that things are girl books or chick lit or whatever. And a lot of that is thanks to Twilight. And the offshoots, you know, and what is that? The gray one, 50 Shades of Grey and things of that nature, which is coming off of Harry Potter, which was very co-ed, you know, very gender neutral. People were reading it. It brought young adult into the mainstream and adults realized, hey, I can read young adult, which is so much fun to read.
Yeah.
So much fun because it's.
Oh, I love young adult.
Yeah, it's innocent.
Some of the most actual. See, you say it's innocent, but I think young adult, as a generally speaking, as a genre right now, has some of the most provocative stories going on.
Yeah, but I mean, what I mean when I say innocent, it's innocent because it's pure emotion. Okay. Sometimes, and you know, you're, I don't know. I feel like some fiction is so gritty and bogged down with negativity that is missing from YA. And maybe they're just, it's because the authors are trying to put in too many $5 words or something like that. I'm not sure. But YA has always been just a lot of fun for me to read.
Yeah. I'm actually writing YA at the moment. And it's a lot of fun to write. I'm writing a steampunk ministry story set before Phoenix Rising. So it's got like I wouldn't say, no, she's not me, because she's smarter than I am, which is hard to write someone smarter than you. But it's a young engineering girl who's like 17 years old and doing it. And it is lots of fun, and it's interesting to try and put a little bit of your experiences as a teenager in, but also trying to do stuff that teenagers now can also experience and stuff.
So, and identify with, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. But it's also Victorian, so. I was not born in the Victorian era, just to be clear.
Yes, well, you know, it's they always say write what you know, but when you're writing science fiction, you got to make stuff up too.
Yeah, but it still has to come from a place of truth.
And exactly.
It doesn't matter if you know it, you're making it up.
Exactly.
It's interesting when I'm doing the steampunk stuff, and then I also wrote Weather Child, which was set in New Zealand, just to bring it back around to characters that are strong without being strong. it was great to be able to incorporate like women from my family that had been through, you know, war and the depression. The experience of writing steampunk was great because I was able to draw on stuff I knew about my grandmother and things like that.
Yeah.
And then, of course, give her like a rocket launcher because, you know, grandmas have rocket launchers.
They're so much fun.
Yeah. Actually, that's one thing I was reading about. I can't remember the name of the book or whether it was a comic book, but someone had written something that was totally strange and unusual. It was about an older woman and how they're not very represented in science fiction and fantasy. It's, you know, young chicks swinging from...
literature at this point.
Yeah. Yeah. And I was like, oh, I gotta write myself a badass granny.
Yes.
That sounds like fun. I'm reading
your stuff. You should be reading her stuff. Her stuff is fantastic.
I'm just gonna write myself a granny now.
I'm looking forward to that, actually. And we've already discussed a book that I loved about an older lady, which was written by a man. Which is the Ravenwood tale.
Yes, yeah. Yes. I mean, and Nathan is a great example of some. I mean, he's the very first book of the Golden Clipper.
Mm-hmm.
I'm terrible with names.
Solar Clipper, yep.
The Solar Clipper, that's right. I mean, that was written from a young man's point of view, you know. Yep. So,
well, at least he was a young man at some point, though.
At least he was a young man. He was never an old woman.
He was born 90.
Well... We love you, Nathan.
I mean, a writer should be able to write a character as long as they do their research and think about it
and are respectful. And if they're not sure, ask someone.
Yeah, we're going through edits for the Ghost Rebellion, which is the fifth book of the Ministry series, and it's set in India and Russia. Now, unsurprisingly, I have never been to India or Russia. So we found two people who know the culture and know the country. And so we can ask people. That's the great thing about the internet. You can ask.
Exactly.
If you have trouble writing women, talk to some women.
Exactly. Well, and that's one of the things that I want to talk a little bit about is so many people think to write. And again, we all disagree that there's a thing of women's fiction, but to write women in fiction, you have to be a woman. And that's completely untrue, as we've already stated here. Mm-hmm. And that
you just have to have a brain.
Yeah. Well, and just because you're a woman doesn't mean you can only write women. You know, you can write men, and there should be no problem. I don't understand why this is a difficult concept.
I think the problem is that too many, especially new writers, think that they're writing a gender instead of just writing a character.
Mm-hmm.
True. Absolutely. I agree with that 100%. So the last thing I want to talk about is how do we combat this idea of chick lit, women's fiction, girl books, and so forth? How do we try to get rid of that notion and get back to all books are girl books, all books are boy books?
I was going to say, well, you know, with less bookshops, there's less of the market. But I mean, Amazon puts things in categories and people are like, I don't know. Steampunk is probably more considered a girl stuff. I don't know. It used to be boys. Yeah, steampunk used to be for boys. Tim Powers and then they wrote steampunk, and now it's all romance and stuff. So I think things can change from being cool books to boy books.
Amazon also thinks it knows who you are and gives suggestions based on what it thinks you want.
Right.
It's like, you're a girl.
Yeah, you're a girl. You're going to like this.
Yeah, have a pink tool set. How can we combat it? I don't know.
In the review community, one of the things that we're doing is trying not to label things women's fiction or girls' fiction, and instead we're just using contemporary romance, the actual genre of the book, and not who it's geared for.
Well, I like that a lot better. I definitely will agree with that. I think for me, the best that I can do is, you know, because when I'm recommending fiction to younger people, is just really trying to avoid anything with gender. You know, what's this book about? Oh, it's about a young person, and they've left Earth, and they're going to a rock, and they're going to mine that rock, and they've got to build their business and sustain themselves, and they learn all these lessons, and it's fantastic. Or, you know, I'm trying to think of different young adult books that I recently have recommended, you know, and not even talk about, oh yeah, it happens to be about a woman, because that's not the important thing. The important thing is it's a person that went out into space. You're going to love this and had adventures. Or it's a person who's in a steampunk world, or it's a superhero or whatever that interests that person. And also kind of try to make sure that you're recommending books to, you know, your the boys and the girls, you're recommending the same books to them.
Yeah. It's a shame that boys do drop off in the reading.
Yeah.
Because, and I guess it's probably around middle school. What was that, around middle school?
Yeah, it's around middle school that for some reason, and there's so many things that happen in children's development, and I can't quite understand why it happens, but it does. There's at some point when boys tell themselves that they don't like reading and girls tell themselves that they don't like math. And all kids tell themselves that they can or can't draw. And then they just stop for some reason.
Yeah.
And I don't know why. And if we can, you know, keep the books going and keep them interested in things, that's why YA is so great. You know, things like Harry Potter and Percy Jackson and so forth. You know, if we can keep these kinds of series, I mean, the chapter books are wonderful because you can keep them going and they age with them. If we can have more young adult series that age with the kid as they read, I think we can actually keep them reading. And that's what I loved about Harry Potter.
There's some really, really good middle grade stuff that's pretty innovative and really isn't any gender. John Barrowman, and his sister wrote a series of kids' books that are about two kids whose drawings can come to life.
Oh, cool. I didn't know about that.
Yeah, there's three. The first one is Hollow Earth. I haven't read the third one yet. I always pre-read them before I give them to my nieces and nephews. Because that's if cool. I like it, I know they will.
Yeah, you don't want to give them bad books. That's a good thing to avoid.
Yeah, never recommend bad books or dull books or books where, you know, the kids are going to feel punished for reading them.
But I mean, it made me want to learn to draw again.
Which is fantastic.
I was having so much fun watching these kids do all these drawings.
That's what you call a win-win situation, reading and drawing at the same time. Yeah.
So Tech popped his head in and gave me something to share. Boys, in his esteemed opinion and how it feels to be a boy, boys stop reading because it's weak and they don't want to be weak.
Hmm.
Girls stop being interested in math because nobody likes smart girls, which is a whole other topic, unfortunately.
Yeah.
And everyone stops doing art because art is... And I don't like using this term, but for that, but art is gay. Unfortunately, there's this thing that happens at that age where you decide what you are and what you aren't. And you decide, am I a reader? Do I like math? Do I draw? Do I like sports? You know, there's so many things that you decide. And if we can somehow make reading cool, and we can make sure that the boys and the girls are still reading and they're reading the same material, I think it could be a lot of fun.
Yeah.
Definitely.
Go ahead.
I think there's a lot of good stuff for boys to learn in books. I mean, if you're reading a book where the main character is a girl, you start to learn about girls.
I know.
They're people.
Yeah. And hey, they like things too. Yes. And if you find out, if you find out that they like something that you like, suddenly you have something to talk about. And they'll go as crazy for it as you do.
That's right.
I realize in this discussion that I am very, very spoiled, and delightfully so, because all of the men in my family at all ages are readers. Mm.
Which is great.
Oh, it's fantastic. They all read different things. My yeah. stepfather reads recreational math, but, you know, he's reading.
I'd say the same is true for the men in my family, except for one of my brothers. He just doesn't read, but that's okay. That's his thing. He does other things, but my other brothers and my dad and my brothers-in-law, like, they all read. So again, I'm very fortunate as well.
I think it goes in families, really.
Yeah.
If your parents are readers, then it's just part of the landscape.
I think if you've got a library built into the stairs of your house, there's a pretty good chance your kids are going to be readers.
The funny thing about this is, you know, like when you think about if things could have been different, like my dad was one of eight brothers and they were on a farm and he was the only one that was a reader. And he said he became a reader because he could open a book and disappear and his brothers were no longer around him.
I did the same thing.
He can still to this day, he opens a book and you can talking at him and he's not there.
Yep. Yep.
He's in there. Because I was an only child and I was always surrounded by adults.
There you go.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it's, reading is and writing as well. If you're reading and then you start crazy writing stuff, I think it just opens your mind to all sorts of different people and places and expands your horizons. I think, you know.
And even if you do nothing with it professionally, it helps you be better at communicating.
Yeah,
absolutely, absolutely, and it lets you be able to see other people's perspectives. Mm-hmm. I think being well-read means that you can be open to other ideas because you're constantly in different people's heads and you can see that people think differently.
I remember in high school, I had a government teacher who gave us all a reading list and it wasn't nonfiction. It wasn't political. He was like, I'm supposed to teach you government. What I'm really going to do is teach you how to think. And so this is this list that is all of the things that, generally speaking, well-read people should be familiar with. And one of them was The Complete Angler. It's this, like, 15th century fishing book.
Yeah.
And you're all going, The Complete, why is this on this list? And he said, because it is the ultimate in social commentary for its period.
Wow. Okay. You know, you're reminding me, and a little bit getting back to the whole trying, you know, they're constantly trying to encourage boys to read. I will say growing up and the required reading that we had, we're all centered around boys.
Yes.
I think there was one book that I was assigned to read that was about a female and that was there because it was part of the black history curriculum. And that was, I Know Why the Caged Bird Sings. But everything else was from the perspective of a boy. Old Yeller, the K. Black Boy, Slakes Limbo, I think the name is, the Of Mice and Men and all of those things, you know?
Which isn't to say that they're bad books because they're not. And I think women should read them, but there's so much more.
Yeah. Which is great.
And Tech is screaming from downstairs. One flew over the cuckoo's nest. Yes, that one too. Yes, there was a girl character, but the main character was, yeah. So
yeah.
It's one of those things that, yeah, we're trying to get boys to read at that age. But what does that tell girls?
It's really valid.
You know?
Especially when, if you question it, you're likely to get an answer like, well, these are the classics.
Yeah, these are the classics. Well, why are you, just because it's old doesn't make it better.
Well,
what about the Bronte sisters?
Yeah, I was about to say, I did a whole 19th century, this was at college though, a 19th century history of the novel, and a lot of the stuff was written by women.
Yeah,
you know, which was nice. But I think there was a period, like in the 20th century, where it was just men.
Men, yes. Men. Well, and there's you know, the Jane Austen books and everything have been traditionally women's literature and things of that nature. I'm so not into Jane Austen, but that's okay.
I don't like her, but I never had the appreciation to.
Yeah.
No, I'm a more of a Bronte girl. Yeah.
I've read her and I can appreciate it, but it's not my thing. I do, on the other hand, love anything that has skewed from there. So like Pride, Prejudice, and Zombies, or the Bridget Jones Diaries, or things of that nature, you know, the one with Gemma Robertson. It was a TV show and she goes through a closet door.
Lost in Austin.
There we go. You know, I love things like that, but the actual books, I'm like, oh, I don't care. But yeah, go for the Bronte sisters and other things like that. Absolutely. So, that's pretty much what we've got for women in fiction. And I think we all started thinking there is no such thing. And we all agree it needs to go. And we need to be attracting both boys and girls to be reading books.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Yes. So join us next time as we discuss something else nerdy, but also look forward to more women in fiction in the Nutty Buds feed. Next time when we cover this topic, we'll probably be talking about female characters specifically. But thank you very much for joining me. Sorry to the people that were watching live that didn't get the end of this show, but that's okay. You'll get it in the feed as soon as I can edit it. Thank you very much for joining me, both of you. If you could tell people where you're from and how they can find you. Melissa, how can people find you?
The easiest place to find me, because it connects to everything else that I do, is at my website, missmeliss.com.
And if you have trouble spelling that, you can go to nimlas.org and it will be in the show notes.
The shorts.
The shorts, yes. And Pip, why don't you tell people where they can find you?
Central hub of me, pjvalentine.com.
It's just like Valentine, but with a B. And
yes, that's right.
Also find links to that in the shorts. So thank you for joining me. And please visit these ladies' works and check out their own writing. Thank you. Bye.
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 Welcome back for a little bit of an after show. And I'm going to just tell you a little bit more about the Patreon campaign. So as I said in the opening, you don't need Patreon to contribute. Basically, I have one contributor who is doing it through PayPal. If you'd like to find another way of doing it, say through email, through PayPal or through, well, PayPal's easy. Just go to nimlas.org and you can find the PayPal link and you can donate, and you can even set it up to be a monthly donation or a one-time donation. If you'd like to send me a check or something to my mailing address, you can email me at nukechas@gmail.com or find me on one of the social media networks and send me a private message and we can discuss how that works. In the meantime, basically what's going on is any of the reward levels that I have for Patreon, I will honor outside of Patreon because I understand that some people don't like it. I have one person contributed who just couldn't wrap his head around donating every month. You know, he didn't get the subscription, so he would rather just give me a one-time donation, which is perfectly fine by me. Whatever makes people comfortable and happy. I chose Patreon. If you listen to my episode about crowdsourcing, you'll get many of the answers there. It seems to be a method that people are comfortable with. It seems to be something that's easy, and it's a great way that you can connect with the people that are donating, and you can also, it's something that's very easy for them to do, and they can discover other people. There are so many other people on Patreon that are making great things. And I plan to, each time I do a thank you list, I also plan to mention another Patreon. So first, before we get into this, I'm going to mention that if you're not backing Scott Roche on Patreon, you definitely should. If you go to my Patreon, you will see that I am backing him already. Scott is in a bit of a need for some patronage right now. And so go on, check it out, his writing and his fiction. And I believe he's been recording some of his stories for his patrons. So go check him out. for now. We are going to read the patrons. So these are all of the people that I want to thank for being pretty much awesome. And I'm going to read them off this time in order of appearance, basically by the people that pledged first. So first, I want to thank Shane Poole. Thank you very much. Aaron Jackson, Doc Blue, David Went, Patrick Scafito, Jen Hansen from the Talk Nerdy to Me podcast. Thank you. Harold Whalen, Ian Swallow, Aurora Lee, Beth, Kinsey, Susanna, and I also want to thank Frank. Frank is my PayPal donator. So thank you very much, all of you. I believe every single one of them has selected the limited time reward. Every year I do a daily, you know, daily creativity or pieces of art that I spend no more than a day on. And for Lent, I do one every single day. Well, to start the Patreon, I have decided that for $1 an episode pledge, which is essentially $1 a month, you will get one of my 2016 original pieces. So I will just mail that to you. And that's what you get, which is awesome. And there are some other donation levels that you can look at. I think most people are more on the idea of, like, you know, $1 an episode. If you want to go less than that, you can totally go less than that. If you want to go more than that, feel free. One of the things that I love about Patreon is that you can give a little, and it means so much to the creators. I was all teary when I saw the response because I had this huge fear of creating a party and no one showing up, you know, putting it out there that, yes, I would like some donations. I kind of need them. And nobody responding. And you all who did, I want to thank so much and give you all a hug because you make me feel validated and you make me feel really good to be doing this. The reason that I finally pulled the, launched this, did this, is basically I have lost the discount that I had on my hosting fees. And so it is costing me 40% more to host than it used to. And I'm not willing to change anything because I don't want to lose my hosting plan. I have some really great features in my contract, and I'm not willing to give those up to get that 40% savings back. So while it was a savings, it's a savings I've had for the last 10 years. So it's definitely been a pretty big impact on my finances. So that's why I'm doing that. The other reason is, you know, I'm constantly talking about this, and the biggest criticism I get on the show is that there aren't enough episodes, and I would like to do more. I want to make this next step is to make it a bi-monthly. There we go. Twice monthly, fortnightly podcast so that you would get double the content. And I think it could be done. I need a bit to manage the time. You know, when I'm podcasting, I'm not working for my clients. So if I have a little bit of financial incentive, I can actually schedule the time and not feel horribly, horribly guilty and not be suffering. So there's that. And there's so many other things. I encourage you to check out the Patreon page. Even if you don't want to donate, just see what I have in the works. And if you have any edits or any additions or anything, any feedback on it at all, please send me a message. Even if you want to say, I think it's stupid that you're asking people for money, go right ahead. And, you know, as I have said many times, all of the audio will be 100% free forever. One of the goals I have is to take my old episodes, take the original recordings, and export them as high quality audio and archive them. And that will also be free for anyone. But, you know, I just want to be able to do that and to put that out there. I keep these shows at a compressed rate so that it doesn't fill up your phone or your iPod or whatever that you're using to listen to it. So just having a little bit out there for the audio files, that's something that I think would be kind of neat. But even then, even though it's a Patreon goal, it will still be available to everyone. What do you get for being a patron? You get probably episodes in advance whenever I can. You will get thank yous on the show. You will get possibly special gifts, depending on how well the patronage goes. Basically, if things go really well, I can send people things. If it doesn't, I might not be able to. So it's all based on how things go. You will get to have some input on the show. When I'm trying to come up with topics, I will ask my patrons first. You will be able to, you know, just give me some ideas. And if I have a question, I'm trying to decide which way to go. Being a patron, you get to speak up and you get to tell me, oh, that you should do it this way instead of that way. And basically your voice has just a little bit more weight. So, but no matter what, everybody, there should be no guilt. There should be no pressure. You will always get the same show from me, whether you donate or not. And thank you everyone who did. Like, seriously, I'm teary about it. It's so great. And I can think of all of you people very much. And I think, you know, each name that I saw, I'm like, oh, that's great because that person's so awesome. And oh, that's great because that person's so awesome. And there's like a little story in my head for each patron right now. And that's neat. And now you can go around telling people you are the patron. You are a patron of the arts. Thank you.
The myths of a thousand worlds tell of a time when darkness enveloped the galaxy, an age before the coming of the fifth race. Tales and legends of gods that could crush worlds but with a gesture, and vast armies to enslave the free peoples of our realms. Armies whose existence spanned hundreds of generations, yet long gone. And we ask ourselves, what if these myths have a kernel of truth? One thing is known, those who now claim to be descended from the fifth race are not eager to look back into the darkness, but events have conspired against them, as long-lost worlds outside of the gate systems have been discovered. The first artifacts and data have been studied, and now is the time for the true story to be told. These are the people of the fifth race, before they became saviors of the galaxy. Watch, listen, and comprehend, then spread the lessons we learn from the people of the Earth and its Stargate Command. Engage the translation matrix.
Matrix ready. Input search phrase.
Gatecast, a Stargate podcast.
Gatecast implemented. Translation and interpretation engaged for Stargate Archives. Audio format.
Enhance, please.
Gatecast additional data located. Gatecast.co.uk. Also under the heading Facebook, Google+, Twitter, and iTunes.
Gatecast. By fans, for fans. Stargate forever.
Nelly Bites is produced by Nimlas Studios. You can find us at nimlas.org/blog. Contact feedback at nuttybites@nimlas.org. Call our voicemail line at 347-NUTTY-42 or 347-688-8942. This work is licensed under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial No Derivatives 3.0 Unported License. Basically, you can share it, you can send it around to your friends, just don't change it, don't sell it, don't try to make any money off of it, and link back to me, my site, and everything.